Okay, I think we can start. Welcome everybody, this is my second session. Second session is about two topics, two Azure topics, Windows Azure Mobile Services and Windows Azure Media Services. I will start with mobile services, around 40 minutes, and after that I will move to media services. So let's start by mobile services. Why mobile services? Today, the majority of mobile applications, they all have a backend. A backend in order to store some data, okay? And when I say mobile applications, I mean iOS apps, Android apps, applications which are running on Windows 8 devices, applications which are running on Windows Phone 8 devices. I even mean HTML web application. With mobile services, we enable developers to connect those client applications in an easy and quick way to a cloud-hosted backend, hosted on Azure. Okay? So even if you are a developer, the typical client-side developer, and you're not really used to write some server-side code, you will see that with Windows Azure Mobile Services, it will be a pretty easy task. Okay? How does it work? The mobile services framework itself, it's based on Node.js, server-side JavaScript. Now, if we have a look at the architecture of a Windows Azure mobile services app, what we see? We have quite a lot of client, quite a lot of platforms, and we as Microsoft, we provide as Microsoft, we provide you a native SDK. So we have an SDK for iOS, an SDK for Android, for HTML, Windows 8, Windows Phone 8. And by using this SDK inside your application, this SDK allows your client application to interact with the backend using a REST API. So this interaction between the client app and the backend, the mobile services backend, happens through this REST API. And this REST API is sitting on top of a Node.js application, which is running inside a server-side scripting environment, also built on top of Node.js. And very important, this is the place where you, as a developer, you can define your own custom logic. You can define your own server-side logic. How does it work, that? What you have to know is that every time you create a new mobile service, a SQL database is also being created. And what you have to know is that every time you create a new table inside this SQL database, which is bound to our mobile service, four scripts are being created as well. And those scripts are associated with the table that you just created inside the SQL database. And those scripts represent the CRUD operation. Insert, update, delete, and read. So that's the place where you have to put your logic. So if you want to insert some custom logic during an insert operation, you have to go, open the insert.js file, and make some modification. We will see that in the demo. In addition to that, what we have? We have quite a lot of services. For instance, ones that allows you to do authentication. Another one which allows you to do push notification. And then we have other services that you can use if you want to interact with other component of the Windows Azure platform, like, for instance, the Windows Azure Storage. Let's have the demo. I go inside the Windows Azure portal, and I say that I want to create a new mobile service. So I click on Create. I need to provide the name, my mobile service test 1. Hopefully it's 3. Voila. I say that I want to deploy my mobile service inside the North Europe data center. Currently, we do not have the West Europe data center for mobile services. And now you say that you can use an existing SQL database, or you want to create a new one, a new instance, or use one database which is 20 meg of size, which is 3. I say create a new SQL database instance, and I click on Next. And here I can define the name of my SQL database. I can choose a SQL database server, I select the one in North Europe, or I can create a new one. In my case, I select an existing one. That's why I need to provide the administrator keyword in order to be able to generate a new database inside that specific server. And I click on Next. The mobile service is now being created. You see, it's here, creating. And now what you have to do? I will come back to this service. It takes about 1 minute to generate. I'm going to continue with the demo, and then we come back and we will work with this specific service. Once the mobile service has been created, you can select your service. And you see, I have one which has already been created. And now I can connect an application to my service, a client application. And here what you see that you have quite a lot of options. You can choose between different platforms. You have Windows Store, Windows Phone 8, iOS, Android, or HTML. And depending on the one that you select, here below, you will get different instructions on what you have to do in order to integrate the mobile service inside your client application. In my case, I want to create a Windows 8 app or a Windows Store apps, if you prefer. So I select Windows Store. And now what you say, here you can choose. You can say, I want to connect my mobile service to an existing application, or I want to create a new Windows Store app. Let's first have a look at connect to an existing Windows Store app. Here you can say, you know, I have already a Windows Store application which has been written in C# or maybe JavaScript. And the first thing that you have to do, I'm telling you that here, is that you need to download the mobile services .NET SDK. So you do that via NuGet package. And then what you have to do, you need to register your service with this piece of code. So a new instance of the mobile service client object. Class is being created. And what I'm passing a URL. And this is the URL which is pointing to your mobile service. And the second thing that you have, it's what we call the application key. And the application key is being distributed with all client applications and is being presented by the client application every time the client application makes a request, makes some communication with the backend of our mobile service. But pay attention, this is not needed in order to authenticate the user. Okay? It's just a way, if you want, to limit access to our services, just to those applications that they have the application key. So that's the first option. Connect to an existing one, but all the steps which are here below, I'm going to explain them in the sample, which I have already downloaded, because in my case, I said I want to create a new Windows Store app. And then it's telling me, OK, you have to get the tool. I have already everything set up on my machine. As second step is telling me that I need to create a to-do item table inside the SQL database which has been generated. Why that? Because the first step is telling me that I need to download a sample project, and this sample project is expecting a to-do item table on the backend of my mobile service. So I say, create the to-do item table. I actually have to go back to my service. You see, it has now been created. So I go here. I click Create a New Windows Store App. I say, create a to-do item table. So a to-do item SQL table is being generated inside my database. And as first step, I need to download the sample project. I did it already. Now, if you go now inside the data section, you will see that the to-do item table has been generated. I click on that one. And what we can see is that there is just one single column, the column ID. Okay? Keep in mind that. Now let's go inside the sample project that I have already downloaded and I have already opened inside my Visual Studio. The sample project is actually registering the mobile service. This is exactly the same piece of code I've seen before. Of course, I need to change the authentication key because I've created a new mobile service. So I go here, I select my mobile service one, the one I created, and then click on Manage Key. From here, I can grab the key. So I copy my key. I go back inside the project. And I place the authentication key here. Now I start the application so that you see what this sample application is doing. It's pretty a simple application. It's a to-do application which allows you to register your to-do stuff. So you say, I have to do that, item one, save. I'm making a call to my mobile service, which is then storing the item one inside my database. I say I have to do item two, save, item three, save. And now I got on the right side the list of my item. If I check the checkbox here of item two, it means it's done. And so it disappears, it goes away. Now, how can I do something like this? Before I do that, let's go quickly back to the portal so that you see that I'm really interacting with the mobile service test one. I click on that service, I click on data, you see the to-do item table, and what you see the three items I just added, item one, item two, item three. But you see something more. You see that if you remember previously, there was just one column. And now we have ID, we have text, and we have complete. How that is possible? We have three columns. So the structure of our SQL table has changed. Why that? Because per default, mobile services use a feature which is called dynamic, dynamic schema. And it means that in case the mobile service gets data from the client during an insert operation, for instance, the columns that are not available inside the SQL database are being generated automatically. So if you go inside the configuration section of my mobile services, you see here that I have this enable dynamic schema on. And per default, it is on. I would say this is a nice feature during the development phase of your project, but as soon as you go in production, I would put that probably on off so that you don't get any surprise, okay? Now let's go inside the application. I go inside my application, we have seen inside the main page, app.xaml.cs, I have registered my mobile service, which is pointing with this URL, with the application key. Now I go inside the main page. Inside the main page, what there is here? There is a class called the to-do item class, defined by an ID field, text, and complete. So three different properties. And here you can note that text and complete are being decorated with this JSON property attribute. So this is the name which is then used on the server side in order to create the column inside my SQL. So I'm saying text is the name which is being used actually to create my JSON message because I'm using a REST communication and the format is JSON, as you will see in a moment. And that's the name I'm using, text and complete. And this is the name which is being used as well in order to create the columns inside my database. So I've defined the to-do item class. And then what do you have here? You have two objects. The first one is the items collection object, which is of this special type, a mobile service collection to-do item. And this can be used, if you want, as a data source for controls like the list view, the list box, the grid view control, and so on. So this collection can be, if you want, populated with the result of a GET request, which is done to a mobile service. This is the items. And then we have the to-do table object. And the to-do table object, you see, in order to create a to-do table object, I'm calling this specific method called getTable, passing the name of my object, to-do item. This object here, it allows me actually to get access to all the CRUD operation, insert, update, delete, and read from the client. Okay? Now what we do? We go inside the UI. Do you remember there was this save button? I double click on that save button, and I am inside the event handler. What I'm doing? In case I want to add a new item, I'm creating a new instance of the to-do item class. I'm setting the text property with the value which has been provided by the user. Then I'm calling the method insert to-do item. So I go inside insert to-do item. Of course, I can right click and say go to definition. I got the to-do item here. And now what I'm doing, I'm using the to-do table object. Remember, it's the object that has to be used in order to execute CRUD operation, and in that case, I want to do an insert operation. Note that we are using the asynchronous pattern, await async pattern. You see, await async, that's the new pattern we introduced last year, or already 2 years probably, in .NET 4.5, so in order to do asynchronous communication. I'm calling this method, so I'm calling my mobile service. You just have to write this line of code, and you're done. And then I'm adding this to do item to the items collection, which is the one here, which is the one which is then bound to the list view, which is here inside this part of the UI. Here below, you have a refresh to do item, which is that one here. There is a refresh method, which is making a call requesting all the item in the database. So once again, CRUD operation. That's why you use the to do table object. And in this case, it's a select. You call the to collection async method. You can also define some where clause if you want. Link, it's really, really wonderful stuff, as you probably already know. Cool. Now what we want to do. I know I told to you on the first slide that I'm actually calling a REST API. But here I don't see anything from REST. So in order to prove you that I'm really using a REST API, I'm going to use Fiddler. Okay? So I start Fiddler here. Can remove all the stuff, which is catching all my traffic. And now I'm going to prove you that I'm using actually a REST API. So this is the URL which is pointing to my service. You see, it's a little bit small. My mobile service test1.azure.me, tables/tables/to-do-item. So I want to get all the items which are inside the to-do-item table. And I'm doing a get operation, OK? Let's remove everything. And I try to execute that. I have a problem. I got a 401 exception. It's an authorization exception, a security exception, if you prefer. Why that? Because if you go inside the portal and you open the to-do item table and you click on the permission section here, what do you see? You see that we have, for read operation, we say that everybody which has the application key is allowed to do a read operation. The same for insert, update, delete. I want to change that. And I want to say that everyone. So I click on save. I change the permission on that table. Everybody is able to get information. I can now go back to Fiddler, remove all the stuff here, execute once again the same. And this time I got back a 200. So successfully. HTTP 200 means successfully. And note here below, you see I have this JSON payload. Here it's row. OK, you got the result. This is JSON. You can navigate here. You see I have item 1, item 2, item 3. Now what I want to do? I want to do an insert. So I don't do a get operation, an HTTP get, but I do an HTTP post operation. So I switch here, and I say that I want to do a post. But we have seen before that for post insert operation, I need the application key. So what I need to do, I need to pass this application key in the authentication header of my HTTP request. So this is the header. I place the key. I still need to replace because this is the wrong key. So I go once again inside the application.xaml.cs. This is the key, the one I'm using inside my Windows Store application. I'm replace it so that now I am allowed to do post operation. Remove that one. I say execute. Of course, if I do an insert operation, I need to tell him what item do I want to insert. So I need to provide a body. Okay. So I go here, and I say that I want to insert a new item called my Fiddler item, you see, text, and complete equal true. So let's remove everything. Let's retry to do the post successfully. I can open it. And if you go inside the JSON payload, you see one item, the item which has been inserted, my Fiddler item. He got ID 4 because the ID is being assigned on the server side. And so now I think I've pretty proved to you that this is really a REST API. What you can also do, you can really start to do nice stuff. You can do, once again, a GET operation. You can start to put some filter. It's like a where clause. You say, OK, want all the to-do item which has the property complete equal true. You click on execute, and you got the list. Item 2, it's complete true. And my feeder item, complete equal true. So you see all the operation, you're actually writing one single line of code here, like the insert operation or the to collection async, but what you actually get is an HTTP request, a post, a GET, whatever it is. Good. I think I've proved to you that it's a REST API. Now the next step that I want to do is to insert some validation logic, OK? So let's go inside my table. And let's go inside the script section. And here you see those four scripts that I mentioned before. The to-do item table has been created. And at the same time, by creating a new table, four different scripts representing the CRUD operation have been created. Insert, update, delete, and read. Inside the insert, and this is JavaScript on the server side. Inside the insert script, what I got? I got an item object, which is actually a representation, a JSON representation of my to-do item. You get a user object, and the user object, it's the user that has submitted the request. But in my case, I have no users which are authenticated inside my application. So in my case, the value here, it will be undefined. So this information is just available in case you need to integrate authentication inside your application. I have a slide on that. It's pretty easy to integrate that. You will see that later. And then you have the request object. And with the request object, you can really control the execution of your request. What I want to do, I want to add some validation. So I've prepared here a piece of code, copy, and replace. And what I'm doing, I'm saying, in case the item text is longer than 10 characters, in that case, I'm going to send back a response with a 400. It's a bad request. And I'm saying to the user, hey, man, text length must be under 10. OK? That's the error message. In case everything is good, what I'm doing, I'm making a little bit bigger, maybe. I'm setting a new field called created at with the current date and time so that I know when my item has been inserted inside the database. And then I say request.execute. And this is working. Why that? Because once again, we have dynamic schema enabled. So I can just say I need a new field, let's create it, and it will be created on the flight, if not available yet. Now what we have to do, we have to save that, and I have to go inside the client application and do some modification in order to handle the new field created at, and in order to catch the exception in case I'm landing on this line of code. So let's go inside the client app. The first thing I want to do, I want to add the definition of the new field. I go inside the to-do item class. I place the new field, decorated with this attribute. And then what I do, I want, of course, to show the created at field inside my list view control. So I go and I select my list view control. It's here. I go below, here I have already the checkbox, and I want to place next to him a field which is showing the created at date. And last, the most important thing, I need to handle the exception. So in case of an insert operation, I want to add an exception. So the exception, I can copy the code. I go here. I can select those two lines, right-click, and say surround with. Try, so that I get the try catch block automatically and replace the catch exception with my code. And what I'm doing, I'm catching the mobile services invalid operation exception. And I'm showing the message, which is, in our case, text cannot be longer than 10 charts. Let's try that. So let's compile. Let's start the application one more time. On the right side, you get the list of the item, item 1, item 3. I try now to enter something which is longer than 10. I press save. Boom, I got the exception. I catch the exception, and then I show the message dialog. HTTP 400 with the message. Good. In case I place just item, I don't know, 66, save. Boom, you got it on the right side, and now you get as well the created date, the new field we have added. Good. Let's go back to the slide. So you have seen that you can work with data inside the script in a couple of different ways. We have the request object. We have as well a query object, which is just available inside the red.js script. And with the query object, you can really start to modify all the query operators, sorting, paging, and all the stuff. Then we have the tables object, which is a nice object. So what you can do, you can, for instance, get access to the to-do item table or whatever table you want. And you say tables.getTable, you pass the name of the table, and then you can use the to-do item table object in order to execute any kind of CRUD operation on that specific table. Insert, update, delete. Then we have another cool object, which is the MS SQL object, which allows you to write pure SQL statement. And why that's interesting? Because don't forget that when you create a mobile service, a SQL database is being created. And a SQL database, it's a relational database. So you can use that thing. You can start to think about how to structure your data. You can start to define relationship between your table. And so by using the MS SQL object, you can also write queries across the different table. It's really up to you to define the structure of this table. I put some links to the documentation. The documentation for mobile services is really great. You can just go there, you say, I need that copy-paste of code. I know maybe you say, oh my god, JavaScript, but it's really easy to do, okay? But and you can just copy a lot of samples. So you just go there and you grab the sample. We have as well a couple of preview features. The first one is the scheduler feature, which allows you really to execute script on a schedule basis. So you got there a screenshot. You see I can say every 15 minutes I need to run a job. It can be a cleanup job. It can be a job that will send some push notification to all the registered clients, whatever you want. It's still in preview, but it's available. And then you have the scale feature. Also here it's in preview, so you can scale out the instance count, which means you can increase the number of virtual machines on which your mobile services is being deployed. You can even scale up the SQL database. So you say, I'm not happy with the free 20 megabyte database. I want to have a bigger database. You can go inside the portal, you can change that and have a bigger database. Absolutely possible. I wanted to do the push notification demo using Visual Studio 2013. It would take me 10 minutes that I don't have. So if you want to see the demo, you can just come outside there. I can show to you how you can add push notification to your client application using Visual Studio 2013. It's really easy to do. Also, the documentation is really good. But if you want to see that, you can come, and I would be more than happy to show you that. Authentication support inside mobile services. We have out-of-the-box support, which means that you can register your application with an identity provider. Those are the identity providers that we support, Microsoft account, Facebook, Twitter, Google. And it's really easy to do. I put a link to the tutorial. Anyway, if you integrate authentication inside your application, what you can do, you can go inside the same page we went before, where you can change the permission on the at the table level, and you can say that for all the operation, all the CRUD operation, those operations are allowed just in case the user is being authenticated. Otherwise, nobody will be able to call your service. How can you integrate authentication on the client side? It's really easy. It's one line of code. This is just to give you an idea, okay? Anyway, put the link on the tutorial. It's really easy. You need to register your app with the Windows Store or with Google or with Facebook and so on. It's all written step by step inside this link. And now the typical question, how can I integrate custom authentication inside mobile services? It's not that easy, I would say, but luckily, we are really lucky because Josh Twist, which is an Azure PM from the mobile services team, he wrote a blog post and is showing you how you can integrate custom authentication inside your client application using mobile services, which means if you want to have your own database with your own username and your own password. It's absolutely possible. I put a second link, which I think it's quite interesting. It's a tip which is showing you how you can cache the identity of the user. Why do you need that? If you want to avoid the user every time he starts the application, he has to provide a username and a password so that you can cache the identity on the device. He's showing you how you can do that. Cool. We are at the end of the first part of the presentation. This was about mobile services. I think you got an idea. Now let's talk about Windows Azure media services. Why do we need media services? Today, we have a proliferation of videos, okay? And when it comes to deliver those videos, we want them to have delivered with high quality. We won't have to be delivered for any devices, anywhere, any times. But we have to deal with quite a lot of stuff. We have to deal with multiple formats. We have to deal with multiple bitrate. And then we have quite a lot of challenges. We have to manage infrastructure cost, okay? Because, of course, you need a robust infrastructure in order to be able to deliver videos. You need to find out what's... you need to predict if you want the peak of your video streaming in order to not disappoint your customers. So you need some performance and so on. You need to monetize. You need a way to monetize your content, so a way maybe to add some ads to your media content and so on. You want to avoid that others can steal your media context. So the topic around the digital rights management is really important. So you have quite a lot of challenges. And in order to help you with all those challenges, we created Windows Azure Media Services. And in Media Services, we offer you quite a lot of services. Ingestion, it's uploading, if you want, an easy name. Encoding, format conversion, content protection, and so on. You see them on the slide. I put in white live streaming and analytics. Why that? Because those two features, those two services are not available today, but they will be soon. If you have a look at the Scott Guthrie blog, which is Azure PM, he was answering one question. It's a little bit hidden in the forum once, and he was saying that in January 2013, he was saying late this year, it will be public. Currently, there is just a private preview of live streaming, so just for some special customer, but I'm sure that very, very soon it will be available for everybody. The same for analytics. For what you can use media services for, delivering training video, just to give you some ideas, streaming video content for your website, or doing some building some video demand premium content service for streaming live video event. Just to give you an idea, Windows Azure Media Services or the technology which is behind Windows Azure Media Services was used for the London Olympics game, just to give you an idea of the kind of event for which you can use media services for. And now, we, as developer, what we can do? We can basically do two different things. You can create applications which can be used in order to control media services. And with application that control media services, I mean application that can automate the workflow of a of a media, like saying I want to upload the media, I want to encode this media, I want to deliver it to the customers, and so on. All that is possible by using one of those three options. You have a REST API, which is available. You have a .NET SDK in order to create those kind of application. I will use the .NET SDK in 1 minute during the demo in order to show you what you can do. I will use, and the third option is Java SDK. So the first thing is building application that can control media services. The second option that you have as a developer is to build applications that are able to consume media content, okay? So you create the platform to deliver content, but then you need client applications that are able to consume media services content. And here, depending on which platform you're targeting, Windows 8, Windows Phone, iOS, Xbox, Android, and so on, whatever you want, you have to use different SDK. I put the link there, client SDK and player framework, and the link to the documentation. Once again, the same slide. Why that? Just to tell you that some feature are available inside the Windows Azure portal. Some others, like content protection, are available just programmatically. It means you don't have the feature inside the portal. You need to write code in order to use some of those features. Okay? And now it's time for the demo. So I am inside. Need to close that one, make it a little bit smaller. Now what I want to do. I've already created a media services account because it takes around 5 minutes to create. I created the media services account. You say file a new media services account, nothing special. I can maybe show you quickly, sub services, media services, quick create. You provide the name, you provide the storage account where your media content will be stored, and then yeah, the name. That's the only thing you need to do. Once the media services account has been created, what you can do? You can start and you can go inside the content section. Okay? And here you see that I've already created a couple of videos. Now what I want to do, I want to upload a new video. So I click on upload. And here you can upload one video from your local machine. I do that. Okay. You can upload the video taking it from another storage account. Please note that here there is a limit, 200 megabyte. If you need to upload bigger video, you need to do that programmatically. Or we also have other option that I will mention at the end of the presentation. So I want to upload that video, which is on my local machine. Here I can provide the name, Azure Intro MP4 Source, and I click on OK. The video is now being uploaded inside, inside the portal. I actually did it already with another name, Azure Intro Source. And now what I want to do, now I want to, OK, it's done. So it's that one here. Now what I want to do, I want to encode the video. So I click on the encode button. And here you see you have quite a lot of options. Let's have a look at a couple of them. The first one is going to create the smooth streaming format. The smooth streaming format is the adaptive streaming proprietary format from Microsoft. If you select the third one, you will get HLS, which is HTTP live streaming, which is the Apple adaptive streaming format. If you select the second one, you get, for instance, just one single MP4 file, and so on. And here you get quite a lot of options, depending on your need. In my case, I want to create a smooth streaming video. That's the name of my output file. It's the encoded one, OK? I click on OK. And now what's happening? You see creating encoding job for media content. Successfully created. So an encoding job has been created. So you can go inside the encoding section. And what you see here, you see that I have this job. A job is being made by task. I have an encoding task. And now I know that soon my encoding task will be picked up. by somebody, by a server, by an encoding server, and so my content, it will be encoded in the, in the smooth streaming format. Why I know that my content will be picked up immediately? Because if I go inside the encoding section here, I said that I want to have one reserved unity. So I pay in order to use one dedicated encoding unit. The same can be done for streaming unit. So if you click on origin, you see here, origins, you click then on scale, come on. You open it and you click on scale. Also here you can increase the number of dedicated streaming instances. And you see that for one unit, we guarantee you 200 megabit per second bandwidth. Maybe just short, one slide with the prices so that you get an idea. You don't have to buy, you don't have to use dedicated unit. If you don't do that, you are using the shared, a shared machine, which means for the encoding task that we cannot guarantee you any wait time. So your task will be put in a queue, and at some point it will be picked up and it will be encoded. If you want to buy to reserve one unit, you pay $99 per month for the encoding service. For the streaming service, if it's shared, also here, no guarantee, no bandwidth guarantee. If you buy one, you have to pay $199 per month, but then you have peak bandwidth guarantee 200 megabit per second. I also put a link here below, a link to the, all the pricing detail around Windows Azure Media Services. Sorry. But let's go back to the portal and let's see my job. My job is now finished, you see, 100% completed. I can now go back inside the content section. And you see that I have now this file, which has been generated. It's a smooth streaming file. Now the next step, what is? I need to publish it. So I can click on the publish button. And in a couple of seconds, my video will be available for external people. So it's now published. By clicking on publish, a URL has been generated. And I can copy this URL. But what you can also do, you can select the video and play it inside the portal. So you can start it. OK, I do not have now the sound connected, but anyway, it's working. But what you can do, you can copy the URL, and you can paste it inside, for instance, a Windows Store application. So I've already created a Windows Store application, which is using the Microsoft Player framework, is using this Microsoft Smooth Streaming Client SDK, and that total reference. Sorry. I have created the media player object inside my inside my application, and that's all I did. And now need sorry, I have a I now place the URL inside my application. I can now start the application. This app supports smooth streaming, and I got my Windows Store app, which is consuming Windows Azure content. Now let's go back. Let's go back to the slide. I will try to finish the presentation. Really. And I want to talk a little bit about a new cool feature called dynamic packaging. And about dynamic packaging, it's about encoding your video once and convert it in real time to multiple format. If we have a look at a classical way, what do you see? We have the source, which is being encoded. It's being encoded in this multi-bit rate MP4. And from here, what you traditionally have to do, you have to package this content in the different format, which can then be consumed by the different client. So in case you're targeting iOS devices, for instance, you need the HLS format. In case you're targeting smooth streaming or targeting Windows 8 devices, you have to package and create the smooth streaming format. With dynamic packaging, it's really a cool stuff. You always take the source. you create the multi bitrates, MP4, but after that you're done, and the server, it is what we call the origin server, or if you prefer, the streaming server, it will dynamically package for you the multi-bitrate MP4 format and create on the flight all those different formats. And what's the advantage here? You don't have to lose time for packaging, first advantage. And second advantage is you just need to store once your content in one single format, in this case, the multi-bitrate MP4 format. So you don't need to use additional Windows Azure storage in order to store as well the HLS format and the smooth streaming format and so on. So you can spare some money. One more information. Actually, the input format, what you see here, can be as well smooth streaming, OK? And what you also have to know that in order to use the dynamic packaging feature, you need to have one reserved streaming unit, one reserved origin server. And last thing I want to mention, you see that dash here. What's that? Dash is the first international format for adaptive streaming. So today you have three proprietary formats, smooth streaming, HTTP live streaming, HTTP dynamic streaming from Adobe. Dash is a new international standard for adaptive streaming, and probably in the future, the industry will go on that standard. So we are even able already today to produce, to support this standard, okay? I told to you more information. If you need to upload really a big quantity of media content inside Windows Azure Media Services, what you can do? You can do that programmatically, but if you really have a lot of data, like 5 terabytes of media, we have a couple of other solutions. One is a special SDK that you can use in order to do that, and the second option is to use some third-party services. I put a link on a blog post of one guy, again, from the Azure Media Services team, which is describing all those available options. With that, I am already at the end of the presentation. I don't know if you have, I forgot to do a demo, actually. That's why I'm pretty, that's soon. I still have 10 minutes, perfect. Okay, so far you have seen everything inside the Windows Azure portal, but everything can be done programmatically as well. How can you do that? It's pretty easy. So, I go inside the portal. I select my media service, and here you see that I got some hint in order to write some code. So here you get all the code you need in order to upload a video programmatically, in order to encode the video programmatically, and so on. Let's try that. I start Visual Studio. I create a new project. I say I want to create a new console application. Now I prepare those console write line to make it a little bit clearer what I'm doing. Let's make it a little bit bigger. So I'm going to upload the video, and then I'm going to encode the video, and I will skip the publishing, okay? Now I go inside the portal. I copy the first piece of code, and I place it inside my console application. Let's make it a little bit bigger. I need to resolve all those. First of all, I need to add a reference to the media SDK and the .NET media SDK. And in order to do that, I'm going to use the package manager console. So what I'm doing now, I'm say install package. The package is called Windows Azure.media services, and I want to take version 2.4.0. Enter. Wow. What's that? Install Windows Azure Media Services. I think I missed one S. And now it looks better. So now I'm adding a reference to the media SDK. it's done. I can now, not yet, let's wait, voila. I can now resolve all those class. I need to provide the path to my local C# file, the same I uploaded before. I will then clarify you the code. And then for the encoding part, you see here inside the portal, you can choose which kind of format do you need. Do you need a smooth streaming? Or do you need, I don't know, one single MP4 file? And you see that by changing, in that case, it's changing the just one line. And here you can change the name of this encoding preset. On the documentation, you get the list of all those strings that you need to use depending on the kind of format that you want to deliver. So you say smooth streaming. Sorry, that one here. I select, I copy all the code. I go inside my application. I say paste it. I need to resolve that one as well. And now what I do. First of all, OK, this is the file that I need to upload inside the Windows Azure portal. I'm creating a new instance of the Media Context class, passing the name of my media service account and passing what we call a managed key, an application key. So if you go back here and you select your service account, you see you have a managed key section. That's the primary media service access key that you need to copy, that one here. Okay? Then I create an asset, and the asset is being uploaded. That's the first part. The second piece of code, what it's doing, is doing exactly what we did inside the portal. And so the first thing that we do, we create a new job, a new encoding job. And inside the job is made of tasks. That's why we say job.task.addNew. I want to add a new encoding task, passing the kind of encoding preset. Encoding preset, I'm saying here, I want to have smooth streaming. And when you're done, you can just call job submit. I do not want to go too much into the detail. I can now start my application. The idea was to do the demo before, because it takes some time to upload and encode, so that I could show you the end result. But yeah, please trust me, it will absolutely work. I think we still have 5 minutes. So the upload has completed, and now is encoding. Of course, here we have a good connection, so I open that one. I click on content. I see my file. I go in the job section. You see that a new task has been created. Still need to be encoded, or probably it's just a refresh from the UI. No, it's still encoding. We still have to wait a little bit. Now it's coming. It started. This is just to show you that everything you can do within the portal can be done by using the Media SDK and much more. Come on, come on. Still working. Still have 5 minutes, so I can wait. I don't know, maybe, do you have any questions? Now it's 54%. It's not doing a refresh of the UI every time, but soon it will be 100. Come on, come on, come on. Come on. Encoding is a tough job. Voila, it's done. I can go now inside the content section. I see my file, which is that one here. Yes, I think so. Yes. I can now publish it because I didn't write any publish code. I can publish it. I can copy the URL. I can go inside my Windows Store app. I can place once again the URL, and I can test it and see if it's working. And it's working, okay? So that was the world tour. That's the end of the presentation. I don't know if you have any questions. No questions. Otherwise, I will be outside the world day tomorrow as well. If you want to see maybe some more additional stuff, maybe around mobile services, as I told to you before, push notification or whatever, just come there and I will be happy to show that to you. Okay, no question. Then thank you very much for joining and please enjoy the rest of the conference.